This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. A brand new day means a brand new TalkBack for this Tuesday, April 30th. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by Phillips Janitorial. If you need your home and or your business cleaned professionally with 100% satisfaction guaranteed, remember, call Phillips Janitorial, 406-260-6617. Also brought to you by Harrington Surgical Supply, where their mission is always the same, to restore confidence and comfort into your daily life. And by Y West Storage, out at the Y, of course, on Two Smokes Way. Need a storage unit? Here's what you do. Pick up the phone, call 406-510-0590, because of By West, they're making room for you.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, we got a great show for you today, thanks to our wonderful producer, Mr. Nick Christensen. Nick, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
All right, we do have a good show on today, and we're going to start with a gubernatorial candidate. And I like to say Mr. Smith goes to Helena, or wants to go to Helena. Good morning, Tanner Smith. How are you, sir? Whoop, let me get, I got to get the right
button. Put me on.
There we go. Okay, now I've got you on. All right. Well, Tanner, first of all, welcome to KGVO. This is your first time on. And I understand I was at the big soiree on Sunday at the University Center, and I heard a little something, a little, you know, rumbling through the crowd that one individual, one Republican, was not exactly welcomed with open arms at the event, for the MACPAC event. So tell us a little bit about Tanner Smith.
Well, the 30,000 view, you know, I'm a third-generation Montanan. I was born and raised in Stevensville. I've lived in Lakeside for the last 30 years, raising my five kids with my wonderful wife, Kelly. I'm an excavation contractor. Had no desire to be in politics whatsoever until they amassed my kids. So I ran for school board and won that. And then they put a dispensary by my kids' school, so I ran for the legislature. So Tanner Smith has already gone to Helena because I am our current state rep for Lakeside Summers South Kalispell. I rolled into Helena this last session, going to save the world. Had a lot of good, you know, Reagan constitutional conservative bills I tried to get passed, and I couldn't get anything done because there's only actually 38 of us that are true Republicans. You know, the rhinos in the middle work with the Democrats, and our governor is not a conservative, nor is he a Republican. So I actually announced during this last session I was going to run for governor because we all know what we all see it. We're losing Montana right in front of us, and it's because of policies that are coming out of Helena.
Now, if you don't mind explaining, why you think Greg Gianforte is not a conservative or a Republican, well, for that matter?
We can go right on down the list, whether it's the rollout of recreational cannabis. That was the biggest mistake he made. You know, our Republican platform, normalizing drug use, is not acceptable. And under his leadership, we now have four times more dispensaries per capita than Colorado. So there's 400 pot shops in Montana, where Colorado has 520, but we have a million people. Colorado has, you know, over 6 million folks. So his rollout of cannabis, that's part of the reason why we're seeing such the dregs of society and the decay going on around us, is these pot shops are so proliferant. You know, when you have more pot shops than you do churches in a community, that's a bad place to be.
Wow.
And then we have, it's unacceptable, and that's why we're losing the state. And then you take the property tax issue we have. You know, that is by design. We tried fixing the property taxes that everybody's upset about. You know, we should have been acquisition value, whatever you paid, you know, whatever Peter paid for his house is what Peter gets taxed on. Just because your neighbor bought an $8 million house, you know, next to adjacent, that doesn't mean yours is now worth $8 million because you only paid, you know, whatever you paid. We tried to get that stuff done, and that group already has the money spent. We rolled into this 2023 session, and the cake was already baked. You know, to us conservatives, we just got to choose what kind of glitter and sprinkles we want to put on this cake that it was already made. The rhinos working with the Democrats already spent the money. You know, and Greg sued 49 of 56 counties that wanted to cut taxes over that 95 school mill, the equalization. You know, that supplemental bill that folks are getting here in May, That didn't need to happen. And Republicans don't sue people that are trying to cut taxes. I can go right down the list. You have the Kolstad case with the young lady in Glasgow, the 14-year-old that was taken down to Wyoming and then ultimately up to Canada, for the sexual reassignment stuff. But those are things that conservative governors, we do not let that happen. I will stand up for parental rights, every time for every family, because that Kolstad case, that sets the precedent now for, if I have an altercation or a disagreement about my parenting with one of my kids, well, CPS might come in and take my kid out of the house. And those are things that we can't have as Montanans.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tanner, we're up against our first break here. We're going to come right back. Jeff is already waiting to visit with you. The phone lines are open. Tanner Smith is a Republican running for governor of Montana. He's out of Flathead County, or is it Lake? Is it Lake County?
I'm in Flathead County.
Flathead yep. County. All right. So we're going to come right back and continue our conversation with Tanner Smith. He lives in Lakeside. We're going to come right back with more of Talk Back right after this.
Dennis Bragg with your updated forecast. It's a wet, cool transition from April to May this week, and very little in the way of sun in the updated forecast. Tuesday starts with a slight chance of snow showers, transitioning to rain with afternoon sun breaks and a high peaking around 50 degrees. More rain and the chance for early morning snow showers again Wednesday, switching over to rain most of the day with rain likely Wednesday evening. Thursday brings a 20% chance of rain with a few sun breaks and highs closer to 60 to finish the week.
Hey, we are back. This is Talk Back, and we've got Tanner Smith on the line from Lakeside. He's a Republican candidate for governor. Now, I understand you wanted to kind of wrap up a little bit about being disinvited, or I should say uninvited, because you were originally going and then got uninvited. So tell us about that, how that happened.
Yeah, so what happened was that MACPAC, it's a newly formed, supposed to be an association of conservatives. Pack. So I bought one ticket for Tanner Smith to go because I went and heard Don Jr. speak in 2016 when he was up here in Kalispell. So I just wanted to go and listen to him and obviously support his father, who I think is a great is and will be another great president. I bought one ticket under me. The campaign folks there at PAC reached out to us and asked if we'd like a candidate table. And I said, well, of course we'd like a candidate table. We can put up our stuff and have our banners and get the word out. Well, then we were coming back from Billings after campaigning over there, and I received an email that said Tanner Smith is uninvited. He's not allowed to come to the property. So I got my ticket uninvited. The same thing also happened with Charles Walkingchild, who is the Republican conservative running against Tim Sheehy and Brad Johnson for the Senate seat. So it wasn't just me that was aced out. It was also Charles Walkingchild. That we know of, because I spoke with Charles, and he said definitely he received the same exact email that disinvited us to this supposedly conservative group that was meeting. So it was a little odd, but it is what it is when you're up against a machine like we are. Obviously Charles Walkingchild is a Native American, and I'm a Caucasian of Caucasian descent, so it kind of boils down to the haves and the have-nots and the elites not wanting Native Americans or just your normal folk like me attending that, because it might have taken some of the light off of them. So it was unfortunate that it happened.
All right, let's get to the phones. Folks waiting to visit with you. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Tanner Smith. What's your question, sir?
Hey, good morning. I found out about this last week, Tanner, and I immediately was appalled. I actually called in on Talk Back about a week ago. I can't remember the exact date, but and mentioned it. And the email, according to what I've seen, I've been in contact with your campaign manager, Jim Riley. And the email that he sent me said, we have been notified by the people directly working with our keynote speakers that Tanner Smith is not allowed at this event. Do you have any more information a week later on who the people directly working with the keynote speakers were? Is it just the MACPAC? Because last Monday I sent out a request. I should ask, why did you disinvite Tanner Smith from the MACPAC event in Missoula after he bought his ticket and even offered him a candidate table up front? And it's been crickets. Nobody has called me. So do you have anything to add to this?
Thanks, Jeff, for that question. No, we're getting the same exact cricket treatment that you're getting. There's been no explanation. Just reading between the lines, what I'm assuming is it was probably that Alex Brustowicz. You know, he was uninvited to speak at our candidate kickoff, you know, this last January, February in Helena. So I think this was just a little bit of tit for tat. But full disclosure, I had nothing to do with him getting uninvited to our candidate kickoff. You know, I think what it is just your true conservatives like myself, that, you know, the rhinos want nothing to do with me being there, because the minute I'm there speaking with people, you know, I'm taking votes away from them. That's what's occurring. So we haven't heard anything on our end.
Well, is it because there was only one candidate per office allowed? I mean, we had a gubernatorial, we had a Senate candidate, we had, you know, Donald Trump Jr. representing his father. Could there not be, you know, people running for the same office in the same room?
Well, in some of the photos that I saw, you know, Denley Logie was there. And so was Anna Marie White. She was there, and they're both running for that Senate District 44 or 45 seat down in Missoula. So I respect your theory there, but that's not actually factual.
Okay.
Because there was two people running for the same seat. Yeah, it boils down to conservatives versus the rhinos, and they didn't want the true conservatives there.
Okay, Jeff, finish your point, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it sounds like, to be polite, a lack of testicular fortitude on the part of the people organizing it, that they couldn't say no to somebody and risk losing a keynote speaker. So it was a matter of caving into principles rather than holding true to them. So that's really disappointing. But I'd had other indications that the MACPAC was less than an actual Montana Association of Conservatives. And I think this... if not putting a spike in it, I think this really indicates that it is not a truly conservative organization. So thanks.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the call. Yeah. We're up against another break. When we come back, Skip will be on the line to visit with you. Our guest on the phone right now is Tanner Smith, a Republican candidate for governor. He's calling us from his home in Lakeside. So we're going to come right back. By the way, we do have phone lines open at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Coming back right after this.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. Now, life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back, and again on the phone, Tanner Smith, the Republican candidate for governor. You only have him on for about another 8 minutes. I know you had some other things you wanted to add about what happened on Sunday from your perspective before we get our next caller on. Go ahead, please.
Well, the issues on you know, what transpired on Sunday was just basically the rhinos in the middle not wanting our conservative message to get out. You know, we all know what's happened in Montana. You know, the illegal alien issue, I deal with that on week one. We get all those folks out of the state, you know, on week one of my governorship. The homeless crisis, I tried fixing that with my House Bill 959. You know, Montanans, we can take care of each other, but these bad actors from out of state, they need to be removed from our state. You know, I was the original bus ticket guy during this last session when we were debating House Bill 5. Because we're becoming a repository for other states to dump their homeless people, and I will be the bus ticket guy to get them out. We have the water rights issue with the Water Compact. You know, we've lost our water rights to the top 10 feet of Flathead Lake. So Flathead and Lake counties, we've lost water rights. And Mr. Gianforte's current DNRC is suing the Shutter family in Gallatin County for water rights on their property. So there's just a million problems that we have that can all be fixed. You know, our tax policy problem, I will institute my Oracle Act, which stands for Opening Road Access clearing lines and exits, and that's our way to get back into these forests legally to start fuel reduction and fire mitigation, because we're going to have a devastating fire. And these are all things that can be done that I will do, and that will bring our tax base back, you know, for our schools. That'll keep places like Roseburg and Pyramid Lumber in business. I've got biomass incinerators I'd like to put in these smaller communities to burn the wood, because we have the fuel in the forests. We can burn the wood to create the steam, you know, to heat the water to create the steam to make electricity for these areas. We can become an exporter of electricity once again. So I've got big plans. I just need to get in there to the office to make it happen.
Okay, let's get Skip on the line. Skip, thanks for holding. You're on with Tanner Smith. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thank you, Peter. And Tanner, I've never heard you speak before. I'm down here in Hamilton. I'm listening to all your detail. It's I'll say interesting to start with. I tell you, your mom lives down here, and she gets active in a couple of things, especially when it comes to what we're doing with subdivisions and things around our neighborhoods. And I taught her at a couple of meetings, and she was really nice to talk to for everybody. And by the way, just because she was in the peanut gallery in a lot of these meetings.
Skip. Well, we're very short on time, so can you get to your question for Tanner, please?
She said she told you not to run, but meanwhile, I'm going to ask you that what they're calling rhinos. I would suggest that a lot of people think are conservatives, and those that are using the word rhino are extremists. So I'm gonna ask you, when some of the things you said you'd do when you were governor, I'm liking some of the things that you just happened to be talking about. But God, it just soils it when you keep using throwing that rhino in there. So things like the water pack you just brought up. I remember when Al Olszewski was hitting hard on that, and he was correct. I wish it had gone further. So go over a couple more of those things that you're going to do the first day when you said you're going to be governor.
All right, let's let him answer that. Thanks for the call, Skip. Go ahead, Tanner, please.
Well, on week one, I will issue an executive action declaring a state of emergency with regards to these illegal aliens. That's the first thing we need to get fixed in our state. You know, if the federal government isn't going to do their job, I will do that job for them here in our state, using our National Guard and plainclothes and giving our law enforcement men and women the power to go ahead and stop and frisk these folks and get these bad actors out of our state. But we need to start treating our state like we do our property, you know, our own personal properties, because this place is our home. Montana is the only home that I've ever known, and we need to protect it. You know, borders, language, and culture are the bedrock of Montana values. And we're seeing this even so diluted here in the Flathead. You know, they're busing in the illegals here to the Flathead that we're having to deal with. And on week one, we will get those bad actors out of the state. My Oracle Act we will also do on week one, because we need to get back to these forests and get back to fuel reduction before we lose a town. You know, Lincoln County up in the Libby area, people are losing their homeowners insurance because 95% of Lincoln County is national forest. It hasn't been logged or thinned in 40 years. So there's a lot of things we need to hit the ground running. We're going to get these things fixed and get the ball rolling in the right direction. And, you know, it's taken us 40 years to get in this jam that we're in. It'll take 8 to get out. The governor's pardon, you know, everybody complains about the rogue judiciary. We need to remember that the judges just issue opinions. They don't have a judge. The judges don't have their own law enforcement mechanism. That is the executive branch. And these willy-nilly, you know, lawsuits that come out and judges that stop these logging sales or stop whatever it is or voter integrity laws, those are just opinions. It's up to the executive branch and the governor to enforce it or not enforce it. So I will not enforce these judgments through nullification by not enforcing them. That's how we start to push back, you know, on this rogue judiciary. Dan Wilson and Corey Swanson are important to get in there. They have my full support, but we can also, from the other side, our founding fathers gave the executive branch the power of the pardon. So if it's a state law that's passed and I signed it as governor, like take the Laurel gas plant in Laurel, I will tell Northwestern, nope, keep working on that gas plant. Here's your governor's pardon. We need to start proactively pre-pardoning you know, these groups, because all the lawsuits do is just cost everybody more money in the end. So there's a lot of big things we're going to get done on week one, Skip.
All right. Thanks for the call. And do we have time to get, let's get Steve's call on real quick. Steve, what's your question?
Yeah. Hey, real quick. Sorry. You had to hear from Chief of the Rhinos of the Bitterroot County there. But real quick, I wanted to know your take on the special session that was suggested by a few brave lawmakers. And did you support that? And then also, what did you think about the folks who didn't support that legislative session, including Mr. Gianforte that you're running against? And just know that unfortunately, my local House Representative Wayne Rusk voted no against that special session to reduce property taxes in my area. So thanks for any commentary you have on that issue.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Go ahead.
You betcha. Thanks, Steve. Yes, I am all for a special session. I would have been for it in the summer of 2022 before I was even elected. You know, the money needs to go back to the taxpayers. You know, I'm going to have tax policies like not taxing Social Security benefits. Overtime pay, the state of Montana isn't going to tax it. Because the conservative principle is, if the state government doesn't get your money in the first place, then they can't find ways to waste it. You know, when we're banging out $1 billion surpluses, or like $2.9 billion that we had in a surplus when we went into this 2023 session, we need to trim that back so the government doesn't get it in the first place. So I would have been for a special session. I always am for a special session. Some kind of Tabor reform, a taxpayer's bill of rights. We need to get these things in statute so that, I won't say rhinos, I'll say that the Uniparty, so the Uniparty, the Democrats and the softer Republicans, the Uniparty, that they can't then, you know, get that money once they get their hands on it and waste it on their NGOs. You know, there's 200 NGOs in Montana that are supposedly fixing the homeless crisis. You know, 30 years ago, we didn't have these NGOs, and now we have 200, and the problem's getting worse.
Okay, real quick, how can folks find out more about Tanner Smith? Where do they go?
Well, thanks, Peter. If you go to tanner4montana.com, the F-O-R is spelled out, tanner4montana.com. If you can donate money, that's great. You know, I have the message. Greg Gianforte has the money. So if you can donate some money, that would be great. But otherwise, go to tannerformontana.com. We have YouTube videos set up with little snippets of all of our viewpoints on all these topics.
All right. Tanner, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. I appreciate it. All right. Stay with us. We have Dr. John Lott, the Crime Prevention Research Center, joining us here from 8:30 until 10. We'll get to that and Dr. Lott right after this timeout. Okay, we are back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, and we are shifting gears here. We have Dr. John Lott joining us here in the studio this morning, the Crime Prevention Research Center. And I'm sure calls are already coming in for you, Dr. Lott. So, first of all, it's a pleasure and a privilege having you here in the studio. We appreciate it. How are you?
Doing great. It's great to be back.
All right, let's talk about some of your travels. You just mentioned to Nick that you've been traveling all over, all on business, by the way. So tell us where you've been.
Well, over the weekend I was in West Virginia giving a talk there, and then a couple weeks earlier I was in Florida doing a debate, so at Florida State University. So on the weekend I was just talking about the piece I had in the Wall Street Journal about explaining that law enforcement in the United States is basically collapsing, and that the media has been trying to go and say that crime is going down, but I think it's more just a miss. They just don't understand the numbers very well.
Now, is it the fact that the law enforcement is becoming weaker and therefore have been emasculated, if you will, by various legislation to keep them from doing their job, so that they don't have to work so hard to be bad guys?
Well, that's part of it for sure, but there are two sources of numbers we have on crime. One's called the FBI Uniform Crime Reports. Those are crimes reported to police. But most crimes aren't reported to police. And the way we know that is something from the National Crime Victimization Survey, which surveys about 240,000 people each year. And, you know, I'll just give you an example. So that's trying to get at total crimes, reported and unreported crimes. Between 2021 and 2022, the FBI data showed that there was a 2% drop in reported violent crimes to police. And that's what the media talks about when they say that there's been a drop in crime. But if you look at the national crime victimization data, they indicate a 42% increase in total violent crime, both reported and unreported.
So how do those two things juxtapose?
Well, it can both be true at the same time. You can have a drop in reported crime, but an increase in unreported crime.
Okay.
And basically what's happening, and that's related to the point that you were just raising, and that is we've known for a long time that most crimes aren't reported, but we also know that whether people report crimes is partly related to whether they think anything's going to happen to the criminals. And so if you don't think people are going to be arrested, if you don't think that they're going to be prosecuted, what's the point of going to the police? We have police departments in this country where if you call up and unless the criminal's right there in front of you, they're not going to send a police car there. They'll tell you you can come in and fill out a report at the police department that's there, making it more difficult for people to report the crimes. In New Orleans, I was looking at the numbers. The average 911 response time is 3 hours. So, we've had big cuts in police budgets in many parts of the country. We've had huge retirements from police departments, even when they've started to hire new people in the last year or so. You can't replace somebody who's had 10 or 15 years of experience with somebody who's been on the job for a year. And you've also had district attorneys who are refusing to prosecute criminals, and that demoralizes and discourages police from doing their job. I mean, they think, what's the point of arresting somebody if they're going to be immediately released? So here's the bottom line, and that is when things aren't being enforced, people don't report them. And I'll just give you a couple numbers to show you how bad this is. If you take the large cities in the U.S., the cities with more than a million people, prior to COVID, 44% of violent crimes resulted in arrest, reported violent crimes. It started falling in 2020, and by 2022, only 20% of reported violent crimes resulted in arrests. So it went from 44% to 20%. The drop in property crimes was even larger. And one way to think about this, if you look at just not reported crimes, but all violent crimes, only 8% of violent crimes in those cities resulted in arrest. Only 1% of property crimes in those cities result in arrest. And that's just arrests. That's not even charging. You don't even have all those who are arrested get charged. And not only all those get prosecuted, not all those get convicted. So if you're talking about committing any type, and this includes like auto theft and stuff, if you commit a property crime in these cities, you know, you're taking like 1 in 500 chance that anything bad's going to happen to you. You know, it's like no risk at all. And it's not much more of a risk to engage in violent crime in those places.
That brings to mind one word, and it's a word I don't like to hear. It's anarchy. It just sounds like it's anarchy by default, if you will, because
right.
we just simply stop responding to crime. If you're in trouble, go take care of it yourself.
Right. Well, I think that's exactly the way to phrase it. And that's one reason why we've seen an increase in gun ownership, increase in concealed carry. We have 22 million Americans with concealed carry permits now, and we have 29 constitutional carry states, including Montana. And so people have to do what you're exactly saying. Police are extremely important, but police departments have been gutted in many places. They're not being allowed to go and do their jobs. And so it's up to individuals to take up the slack.
Well, here we go. Phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. John Lott, some pretty powerful statements here to start our time together. Agree, disagree, what do you think? I know we live in Missoula, which is a fairly safe community, but we have our share of crime and criminals. And so, as Nick knows, he reports on crime every day. So anyway, 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. We're coming back with more of Talk Back. Hopefully your phone calls with Dr. John Lott. Right after this.
At Carl's.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it.
But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
Okay, we are back on Talk Back, and we're thrilled to have Dr. John Lott with us, the founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Crimeprevention.org is his website.
Crimeresearch.org.
Crimeresearch. Thank you. Crimeresearch.org. I've got it right up there on my screen. 721-1290 is our number. Folks are already starting to populate the phone bank, so let's get Jeff on first. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Lott. Good morning. Good to talk to you again. I want to take kind of a 50,000-foot view of this for a second, because over the last couple of months, I've been looking at the whole woke phenomenon. And I think the late, great Rush Limbaugh got one thing wrong in that. Remember when he, in 1992, when the Republicans took over the House of Representatives,
94.
He said it was a great victory. Was it 94? Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. That he said that we ought to leave one leftist professor on each university. And what actually happened, and none of us knew, I didn't know until fairly recently, is that cultural Marxism did not go away. It just embedded itself deeper into the university systems. And it generated a whole, starting in the law schools, and it generated a cadre of people who have permeated almost every university in the U.S. now, who are all about cultural Marxism, neo-Marxism, identity studies.
Well, what did you say Rush Limbaugh claimed, that there was one at each university? I don't remember him saying that.
He said that in victory we ought to leave one left.
Look, I was an academic at that time. Well, in 91, I left UCLA, and I went to the Wharton Business School where I was teaching. Academia was very left-wing back then. Obviously, it's gotten much more so. When I got my PhD in economics, economics was considered probably the most conservative of the areas in academia. But even then, it was like 60% Democrats, 40% Republicans. I saw a survey maybe about 15 years ago. It was like 12-1 Democrats to Republican in economics. And again, it was probably about the most conservative. But look, around 2000, there was a survey of the top 100 law schools in the country. 93% of the faculty were registered as Democrats. 4% were registered as Republicans. And, one thing I've always tried to tell people is that even that understates the imbalance that was there, because you have to get a supermajority vote to get tenure. And you can be such a sufficiently kooky left winger that you can alienate a third of the Democrats. A third of the Democrats can think you're too wacky to get tenure and you'll still get tenure. But if you're a Republican, you have to get 2/3 of the Democrats to vote for you. And the problem that creates is that the only Republicans that would get tenure are ones that would be people that don't have very strong views or are kind of very liberal Republicans. And even then, they'd have to be in an area like tax or something that the Democrats don't care about and can't get anybody else to teach. They wouldn't ever be in something like constitutional law. And I can't tell you the number of times when I was at the University of Chicago, they had something called the Round Table, where we'd go to the faculty club, and there'd be like 15 or 16 of us would meet twice a week there for lunch. And I can't tell you the number of times I'd be myself against 8 or 9 other faculty members arguing, and we'd be walking back to the offices after lunch, and I'd have somebody come up to me, and they'd say, "Boy, John, I'm really glad you were arguing with them at the time." And I would look at the person and say, "And where were you?" Because you have to, I was the nail that stuck up that everybody tried to knock down. But, even the few Republicans that you'd have in academia were afraid to say anything, even back then. And obviously, it's much worse now. When 2016 came around, and you know, they go and send around these letters to try to get academics to sign to support different presidential candidates. There are only five economists in the country that signed a letter supporting Trump for president. I was one of the five PhD economists. Three of them were like people over 70 years of age. You know, it's just impossible. You go and talk to people and they were terrified that if they signed it, the rest of the faculty there would completely ostracize them and make their life miserable. And so, yeah, this is a problem. I mean, this going back to the 90s, this wasn't an isolated few faculty members. Universities for many decades have been very left-wing. I'll leave you with one last point, and that is when I first became an academic in the mid-80s, there are two types of liberal faculty members, those who became faculty members before the Vietnam War and those afterwards. They both were liberal, but the ones before who went into academia before the Vietnam War enjoyed talking to you. You know, they may not agree with you, but they would talk to you.
They were collegial. Yeah.
Collegial,
yeah.
And they'd try to figure things out. The ones afterwards really just mainly wanted to have people like themselves that were there. And over time, you know, the older liberals died out, and the more doctrinaire ones became the only types of ones there. And so the only people you get hired are, look, my ideal academic faculty would be almost everybody disagrees with me except for maybe one person. And the reason why you want that is because what you want people to hate your papers and try to tear them up. So you know what the weaknesses are before you publish them. You don't want to find out what the weaknesses are afterwards. What makes something a strong academic paper is if you anticipate, and hopefully you can do this on your own pretty much, anticipate all the objections that people are going to make to your papers before you send them off to a journal to be refereed. And so you want people to passionately care about your issues and disagree. But unfortunately, most of academia wants to have people that have the same views.
Jeff, we need to take a break. Thanks.
Sorry.
Thanks for your... No, you're fine. But we're going to come right back. We have Buck, Steve, and Harry all waiting to visit with you. Dr. John Law joining us here this morning in the studio. He'll be here till 10. CrimeResearch.org is the website. The Crime Prevention Research Center is his organization. We're going to come right back with more after this.
Dennis Bragg with your updated forecast. It's a wet, cool transition from April to May this week, and very little in the way of sun in the updated forecast. Tuesday starts with a slight chance of snow showers, transitioning to rain with afternoon sunbreaks and a high peaking around 50 degrees. More rain and the chance for early morning snow showers again Wednesday, switching over to rain most of the day with rain likely Wednesday evening. Thursday brings a 20% chance of rain with a few sunbreaks and highs closer to 60 to finish the week.
Nice sunshine out there right now. We had a little bit of snow when I first got here this morning. It was kind of interesting. Yep. Dr. John Law joining us here in the studio this morning, and we have Buck waiting on the line to visit with you. Buck, good morning. You're on with Dr. Law. Go ahead, please.
Morning.
Morning, Dr. Law. excuse me, I don't have a cough button. I called in because you started kind of implying that, you know, for various reasons, crimes are not being reported or crime stats are not very accurate, and not long ago, I can't remember, follow current events. There's too many stats and too many names every week. But I think it was a female member of Congress and made the statement, well, whatever you want to call them, the illegal invaders in my vernacular, don't commit crimes at any higher rate than the native citizens. Well, I have a relative high up in the Census Bureau. They decided to not try to identify illegals because then they wouldn't come forward. So we have no tracks on them. In crime reporting, to my knowledge, there's no mandate. One or two reports might mention that the perpetrator was an illegal invader, but generally there's no way to track them. So I would argue that her statement could have no basis in fact because there's no way to measure the crime rate amongst illegals.
Right. Well, I mean,
you agree with that?
Well, you bring up a good point. And here's the deal. What they do is they lump together legal and illegal immigrants together in identifying people. And the problem is, at least in the research that I've done in the past, legal immigrants tend to commit crimes at low rates relative to the general population, and illegal immigrants tend to commit crimes at relatively high rates compared to the general population. And so if you mix those two together, you can get a number that's going to be relatively similar to the rest of the population that's here. And so you need to break it down. And the thing that's always been amazing to me is the tremendous political opposition there is to going and getting data on the composition of prisons, for example, whether the people that are in prisons, you know, are they legal immigrants or illegal immigrants? I hope Florida is going to start to get this type of data together. I mean, it's very easy to go and do. I mean, you just have a list of who's in prison and you go and do a background check on them and, you know, you can pretty quickly tell. I mean, we have the NICS system, the background check system that you use for purchasing firearms. You could almost use that to go and see whether or not they're here legally or not. And so I hope we can begin to get some data. I know there was a sheriff in Florida who recently did such a background check on he had like 34 people in his jail. 28 of them were illegal aliens. So whether that's true in other areas or not, we're going to have to wait till we get somebody to get the data together.
Okay, let's get Steve on the line for another call. Steve, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, I apologize for calling twice, Peter. There was just something that stuck with me with what Mr. Lott said that I wanted to let him know of an anecdotal story that matched exactly at a local level here in Missoula. I own a property that's kitty corner to or abuts a park in Missoula, and last summer we had folks camped on our property. I asked them to leave immediately. They threatened me, told me they were going to effing kill me and so forth and so on. I called the cops. He did respond. It was a gal officer in Missoula. I left the scene at that point because I didn't want to be involved. She called me later for more details on what happened. They found out that this homeless individual was not only homeless, but they were doing all kinds of narcotics in their tent with an underage minor. And then when I asked what would happen, she said they arrested him, but probably nothing. They arrest people all the time here in Missoula, and they're out within hours of their arrest, no matter the offense. It's very frustrating to be a police officer, she said. She was saying that her and her husband were thinking about moving away from Missoula because they were so frustrated with the fact that she couldn't do her job properly and continually saw the same offenders over and over and over again on our streets despite arresting them. She said so often they come directly from that West Broadway area with all the homeless population centered there, and there was really nothing that they could do to hold those people accountable. So needless to say, I had recorded the incident when I engaged that individual in my yard just because I wanted to be careful. I was contacted about 6 months after that incident occurred by the DA in Missoula who said, hey, can you be in court in 2 days because we're going to have a hearing with the guy who threatened you and was with that minor on your property. And I said I could be, but unfortunately I had deleted the video on my phone because of what the officer told me that nothing would occur from it. Anyway, the DA in this case said, hey, listen, you know, I think these, I said, I apologize. I deleted the video because I didn't think anything would occur. And they said, hey, that's a very common, usually nothing does happen, but I do care about these cases. I believe in law and order, but I'm very unique in my office. In fact, on this case, many of my colleagues were openly questioning me why I would pursue it. But in this case, the individual was a part of a, he was a victim also of a stabbing, and he's going to be in town to testify in another matter. And so we want to hold him accountable. So we got to court that day. The officer showed
Steve,
up.
Steve, we have less than 30 seconds.
I'll be real quick. I apologize, Peter. My point is that Dr. Lott is spot on. with all of his comments. Anecdotally, here in Missoula, we're seeing the same things occur in Missoula, where police are frustrated, they can't do their jobs, and the judges, by the way, the DA said of the judge, this individual was to appear before, it's a woman in Missoula, he said she's never met a criminal she didn't love.
Okay, I'm so sorry, we're up against a hard break. We'll be back. Stay with us.
This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two of TalkBack underway now. Brought to you this morning by our friends at Y West Storage out at the Y on Two Smokes Way. Need a storage unit? Here's what you do. Put this in your phone, 406-510-0590, because at Y West, we're making room for you. Also brought to you by Harrington Surgical Supply. Appointments are preferred for mastectomy fittings and custom compressions, but walk-ins are always welcome. And by Phillips Janitorial, both residential and commercial cleaning, their specialty. No job too big or small. For the folks at Phillips, it's 406-260-6617.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We have Dr. John Lott joining us here in the studio this morning. CrimeResearch.org is the website. He's, of course, the president and founder of Crime Prevention Research Center, headquartered right here in Missoula. Now, we took Steve right up to the very brink. We didn't even give you a chance to respond to what he said. So please go ahead.
I'm not sure how much there is to respond to it. I mean, obviously, the point that he's...
It just took so long, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's fine. He's detailing a personal experience that we see happening across the country. And so, you know, it's sad to hear him say that you had a prosecutor in the DA's office saying that, all the other prosecutors were kind of poo-pooing him when he was wanting to go and take this case. Somebody goes and threatens to kill somebody, that's a serious crime that's there. You know, beyond the fact that he had these squatters on his property that were there, people shouldn't have to deal with those types of things. The law should be enforced. I can understand the feelings of the police officers. You know, they arrest people and then they get released. And so you have to have a different district attorney in town here. You have to go and elect different judges if that's what you want to go and change.
I will share with you what has been shared with me. The frustrations in one of our City Talk programs was that as a matter of fact, the municipal judges were here, right, when they were running for election. There were three of them running together. And they said, here's how it works. Somebody commits a misdemeanor. They come in, a homeless person or whatever. They come in. Okay, we're going to sentence you to whatever it is, 30 days and $100. They don't have any money. And the jail is full. So, okay, well, you're still guilty. See you later. In other words, there's nothing they can do with them. There's no place to put them. They have no money to pay their fines with. And so that process is continuing all the time.
Well, there are things to go and do. So one thing is, even if the county jail here it doesn't have room, you can go. The judge can go and say, they can order that the county has to go and pay to have them housed in one of the other counties nearby that has extra space in it. Are all the county jails in, you know, nearby? I assume there's a few that probably have a couple extra spaces in there. But, okay, you know, it's not just the judge's role or the DA's role. You also have the county has to put aside resources in order to go and expand the jail. But, you know, these judges often have arbitrary rules on what it means to say that the jail is full or not. You can go and put additional people in, I think, without having to violate any basic human rights that are there. You know, maybe these judges draw the line differently than some other judges would if you were to put in a different set of judges.
Okay, let's get another call in. This is Harry. Harry, you've been waiting the longest. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, John. A couple things. First one is, I have a problem with it when people say unreported. It's like they say, well, you only 1 in 4 rapes are reported, and you say, well, you know, they're unreported crimes. Well, how do you know they happened if they were unreported? I mean, I could say, well, somebody could, they asked me, why? John Lott assaulted me. I felt assaulted by John Lott. Well, was that a crime? Probably not, but somebody, I could say, you know, they asked me, they said, well, that's a crime. I was assaulted. Or two drunks get in a fight, and they break up, go home, no crime, unless there was a cop next door, or right there, and he grabbed one and arrested one, then there was a crime. So,
right. So what they do is, I understand. So there's something called the National Crime Victimization Survey. We've had it for about 50 years, where they go and they survey 240,000 people each year. And they ask a broad range of questions, and they re-ask some of the questions to make sure that, you know, what they're getting is accurate. They'll ask them, you know, characteristics of the criminal. They'll ask them when and where and what crime, where the crime occurred, what crime occurred, characteristics of the assault, you know, how did you respond, what the final outcome was. And then they'll go back and they'll re-ask some of the questions to make sure, because there's a long list of questions, like 40 questions or so that they ask for all these different characteristics. And then they'll go and ask them a few follow-up questions to repeat some of the answers just to make sure that the answers that people are giving there are consistent. And so, you know, the people that are doing this know what constitutes a crime, and they get into very detailed specifics. Questions about what the crime was that occurred, and so that's how they try to figure these types of things out. And
I just think that's just self-reporting, though. I mean, because even though I mean, until it's been convicted, a person is not guilty. There is no crime.
Yeah,
I mean,
I understand. But look, if you take the FBI reported crime data, though, it's based on reported crimes. Those are people calling in and making a complaint. Those aren't convictions that are there.
Right.
So
anyway,
it's just
also the second thing I want to what Peter had said. So if they all these DAs are letting people go, their cops are not arresting anybody. So the jails must be pretty much empty now, huh? All these cities, state prisons are all pretty emptying out now.
Well, in fact, during COVID, from like 2020 to 2022.
Now.
I understand, but what, 2022 is not that long ago. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, but that's now.
Can I finish?
That's not now. That's then.
Harry, look, take a breath.
Okay, but I'm just, he changes the story, ask question. He wants to put back, well, back then this has happened. I'm talking about now.
Right. Well, let me answer your question. You didn't even know where I was going to be going, okay, with regard to the answer, right? Did you? No, you didn't. So I was going to give you a couple of answers to this. The first one was just in recent history, from 2020 to 2022, you had many urban jails where half or even two-thirds of the inmates were being released. And, you know, so you're not going to instantly fill up those jails, you know, within 6 months or a year afterwards when you've had two-thirds of the inmates being released. So you're talking about something well into 2023. We don't really have data past 2023 yet. It's going to be another year before we get the data for 2024 in any type of large amount that's going to be there. But, yeah, no, there's in much of the country, there's still space open in the jails.
Harry, we're up against a break. Yep. Thanks for your call. We're going to come right back. We have Emmett and Dave both standing by, and several phone lines open for Dr. John Lott if you have a question or a comment. That's why he's here to talk with you folks. 721-1290 is our number. We're coming right back after this.
Hey, we have a hunch.
Back, 721-1290 is the number. I'm Peter Christian, Dick Christensen over there taking your phone calls, producing Talk Back. Here in the studio, it's Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center, and Emmett's on the line. Emmett, good morning.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I have a couple of questions about crime in Missoula and Montana and that kind of thing. With the increase in crime that we have here, I wonder if it isn't partly also the psychology of criminals that they're moving from big cities to small towns in Montana and other places to terrorize us. They know that a lot of people have moved away from the bigger cities to places like Montana to get away from crime. And I wonder if the criminals realize that and say, we're going to go to Montana and terrorize the law-abiding citizens over there. They can't escape us. We're going to terrorize them. They consider us chumps because we're law-abiding, or country bumpkins. They don't consider us good people. They think we're weak. So it's like they go after the family people. I wonder if that's part of the reason we see an increase of crime here in Montana. Right. Secondly, you know, now that marijuana has been legalized here in Montana, you see Montana legalized marijuana shops and medicinal shops everywhere, and I see it in the country. Even Oregon has legalized hard drugs. I don't want people locked up for little amounts of marijuana. I want it decriminalized, but I don't want it just legalized everywhere. I wonder if that has also increased the rate of crime. There's a correlation between the legalizing of drugs.
Let's let him answer those questions. Dr. Lott, go ahead, please. Thanks, Abbott.
Well, you know, when I was chief economist at the Sentencing Commission, I must have read more than 1,000 trial transcripts. And one thing that you see over and over and over again is that criminals are like anybody else. If they can commit a crime more easily, you know, they're going to do it. And so victims that they perceive of as being relatively easy targets, you know, you get two robbers, and one robber turns state's evidence, makes a plea deal with the prosecutors to go and testify against the other robber. And they'll ask him the same set of questions. You know, why did you pick this particular target? And he'll say, well, you know, we were thinking about going after the drug dealer down the street, but he has a lot of guns, and it'd be pretty crazy to go after him. And then we talked about maybe going and robbing a cab driver, and they have a fair amount of money usually, but, you know, a lot of these cab drivers have guns. And then we saw this little lady walking across the parking lot late at night by herself, and she looked like a really easy target. And so we went after her, you know, and we stole the money from her. And so, you know, you talk about moving to other places, and maybe they think people in Montana are relatively easier targets than, quote, sophisticated people.
And we have a lot of armed people in Montana.
Yeah,
though.
Right. I'm not sure that would be necessarily a smart move on their part. I mean, you compare it to California, where, you know, a lot of people from California moved here recently. You know, in Montana, about 10% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. God knows how many more actually carry. We did a survey last year for the Crime Prevention Research Center where nationwide about 15.6% of likely voters carried all or most of the time. You know, so you have to take into account that you have these constitutional carry states like Montana where you can carry without a permit. So my guess is Montana's probably a little bit above the average in terms of that. So, you know, that's kind of risky for criminals to go in.
How about the marijuana situation?
Right. Well, just one factual correction to begin with. Oregon did have legalization of hard drugs, but they've just recently passed a law there that reverses that rule that they had. And the reason why they did that was because it was turning out to be quite a mess in the state there. But look, I think you're more likely to have crime when the drugs are illegal. Now, there are problems that you have when you have legal drugs. As Oregon just witnessed, you're going to have a lot more people using them. You're going to have more addicts. You're going to have more problems that are going to be associated with that. On the other hand, when drugs are illegal, you have, just like you had during the 1920s and 30s when you had the mafia selling alcohol, you know, they'll fight against each other in order to control who gets to control the alcohol turf. Now we have fights between rival gangs to go and control drug turf that's there. I don't think people appreciate what a large percentage of murders in the United States are drug gang related. We have 56% of the murders in the United States take place in 2% of the counties. And if you look at what's called a murder map for those counties, what you'll find is about almost two-thirds of their murders take place within 10 block areas within those counties. So murders in the United States are extremely concentrated. And a lot of that just has to do with gangs fighting against each other in order to control drug turf that's there. So basically, legalization, you have the profits aren't going to be there. They're not going to fight against each other, but you're going to have other problems in terms of people using drugs.
With that, we're up against another commercial break. We'll come right back. Dave, Alan, and Jeff are all waiting to visit with you. Our guest in the studio, of course, Dr. John Lott, the Crime Prevention Research Center. And if you have a question or comment, we do have phone lines open, or you can use the KGVO app and use the message us button. We're coming right back.
What can you expect? Hello?
Man, where are you? This wedding is lit. I thought you were coming.
Ooh, I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? You didn't get a flu shot?
I wish I did. I can't believe I'm missing out on Greg's wedding.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf.
Grandma's about to what? What?
Man, I'll call you back.
Oh, man.
Sounds like another case of flu FOMO. Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. It keeps you protected and also protects your loved ones. Protecting our community can't wait. So why get stuck inside with the flu? Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at GetMyFluShot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA.
Chris Jackman, I served in the United States Air Force, and I've deployed 3 times. So in 2017, I was serving as an Air Force First Sergeant. Our motto in that role is, my job is people, everyone is my business. But unfortunately, in that year, I would lose my own brother, Lance Corporal Adam Jackman, to suicide. The majority of veteran suicides are from guns. I store my weapons securely, not only for myself, but for my family. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide. My service never stops.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Need to replace your Social Security card? In most states, you can request one online with a My Social Security account. A My Social Security account gives you secure access to your personal earnings history and benefit status. You can also get a proof of income letter, estimate and apply for benefits, and more. Save time. Go online. Open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. Social Security. Securing today and tomorrow.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Phone lines filling up for Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center. CrimeResearch.org is the website. He's here in studio answering your questions about all sorts of things related to crime. Dave is on the line next. Dave, good morning. What's your question, sir?
Yeah, good morning. Do you believe that convicted felons should be allowed to carry weapons? And if not, then how would we go about keeping them from getting the weapons?
All right, thanks for the call, Dave.
Well,
should they be allowed to, and how do you keep them from doing it?
Right. Well, I mean, I would probably differentiate between whether somebody's been convicted of a violent felony versus a nonviolent felony. I think a much stronger case can be made for people who are violent felons. You know, if somebody's convicted of tax fraud or something like that, I guess I don't view them as being as dangerous to other people. How do you keep criminals from getting guns? Well, you know, it's pretty hard. The major source of illegal guns are drug dealers. I mean, drug dealers have a lot of guns because they got to protect some very valuable property that they have there. And if they can make money selling guns just as they can make money selling drugs, they're going to go and do that. You know, often people kind of focus on how a particular criminal got guns, but you have to go and realize there's so many substitute ways of doing it. I look at a country like Mexico, for example. Since 1972, Mexico's had one gun store in the country. By the way, the most powerful gun that you've been able to legally buy in Mexico since 72 is a 22 caliber short round bolt action rifle. That's not the type of gun that the drug gangs are using down there very much. And where do they get their guns? Well, the drug cartels bring in drugs from around the world, and they bring in the weapons just as they go and bring in the guns. They also steal some from the military down there. But it just goes and shows you, even though they have extremely strict regulations and even though less than 0.1% of the adult population is legally licensed to own a gun, it's not stopping. Obviously, Mexico has had a murder rate that's been as high as 6 times higher than the murder rate that we have here in the United States. And their murder rate more than doubled after they passed the strict gun control laws that they did in 72. You can make it illegal. One thing I would do is prosecute people when they go and they violate these things. I can't tell you the number of times that I see that people who had illegal possession of a gun aren't prosecuted. You kind of wonder what's the point of having these laws on the books if they're not going to be prosecuted. The strange thing is that the gun control people who want to have all sorts of new gun control laws don't seem interested in prosecuting against common criminals, violent criminals who are violating the gun control laws that are there. They're more interested in using those against people who aren't being charged with other types of crimes or don't have a criminal history.
Okay, let's get Alan up next. Alan, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Well, good morning, Dr. Lott. Yeah,
morning.
This is Alan Alt. I read your book. Excellent. I think it should be required reading.
Which one?
I'm More Guns, Less Crime.
Okay, thanks. Because I have 9 other books. I was just curious. But thank you.
I want to piggyback. My question ties into what the last caller asked. You know, the shooting, unfortunate shooting where the 4 police officers lost their lives in the line of duty.
Right.
I don't see much of that on the news. You know, here you have a case. Here's a convicted felon being served papers.
Right.
Because he had guns and he kills and wounds officers of the law trying to enforce these laws. And it's like, I believe it's being taken off the news because it doesn't play into the narrative of gun controls and how you have effective gun controls that these Second Amendment haters are trying to shove down everybody's throat. I think it's a big matter of education. You've answered the question, is what do you do? How do you keep guns out of the hands of felons? But I'd like you to comment more about this and more about the education. Get the gun, how to handle, safe handling of guns back in our schools. We used to have that in Montana. So
all
I'll
right.
hang up and thank you.
Thanks for the call, Alan.
Well, thanks. It sounds like I kind of owe you a dinner for buying one of my books or something, but I appreciate you doing that. Look, I mean, obviously it's a huge tragedy down there with the loss of the officers' lives. Police have a dangerous job, and, you know, we need – anybody who's read my academic research knows that I think police are the single most important factor for reducing crime. You know, and the thing is – with these gun control laws, if given how hard it is to stop criminals from getting guns, the one thing you have to pay attention to, you mentioned gun control laws, you have to make sure that the gun control laws that you have are not primarily going to prevent law-abiding citizens from being able to go and get guns. And that's unfortunately, you know, I just was talking about Mexico. There you have a situation where it's essentially impossible. And when I've testified before the Mexican Federal Senate and House, I've had federal senators come up to me and say that they couldn't get approved for owning a gun. I mean, these are senators who have all sorts of threats on their lives, and they can't get approval. It costs $2,500 just to apply for a permit. Well, so what have you done with those types of rules? You've just basically made it so that the law-abiding individuals can't get approved, can't have guns. But have you stopped the cartels from getting guns? No. All you've made it sure is that the criminals have guns. And so that's one thing that I would just try to emphasize. But beyond that, you know, we need to enforce the laws that we have there. If you're going to make it a crime, enforce the rule.
We're going to come right back. We still have Jeff and Nancy waiting to visit with Dr. Lott, and he's with us all the way till 10. So if you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Or, as I mentioned before, you can use the KGVO app. It's got a message us function. And if you're away from your phone or away from a place where you can call in safely, you can use the app, and we'll be happy to ask that question for you on your behalf. So we'll be right back after this time out.
Montana Sawmill Work.
This is TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. And folks have been waiting quite a while to talk with Dr. John Lott. Jeff has been waiting quite a while. Jeff, good morning, sir. You're on with Dr. Lott. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you much for taking my call. And thank you, Dr. Lott, for your wisdom and common sense. I have a question. You know, I always hear about we don't have any place to put people and we have to let them go. The jail is full. What would be wrong with getting a work camp, or let's say the Arizona example, you know,
right.
Get a work camp, you know, a little Cool Hand Luke action going on. You know, I guarantee the homeless population would go down and give those guys a chance to clean up. What's preventing us from doing that? Is it unconstitutional or is it just not politically correct?
Maybe it's too expensive.
Well, I think it depends on the judges that you have there, whether they approve that type of thing or not. So one question in our earlier discussion, I was pointing out, you know, what does it mean to say that a jail is overcrowded? You know, one judge may say a jail is overcrowded when another one won't say that it's overcrowded. And so, you know, the types of things that are considered humane conditions or not for prisoners, you know, that a lot, those things depend upon the judges that you have. And so obviously the judges that we have here in Missoula are drawing the line differently than it sounds like you'd be willing to draw the line.
Would that have to be legislated by the state to have that happen, or the judges just step in and say, this is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with eating 3 squares of rice and beans and living in a tent.
A lot of that, judges have a lot of discretion over that. Judges have a lot of discretion over that. I mean, you can go and try to pass, you can pass a state law that can increase the number of people per cell or something like that. But then you may run into problems with the judges saying that they don't think that those are humane conditions, and under some type of constitutional decision say that strike down those provisions that you have there. So the judges, and of course we have the wacky state Supreme Court that we have here, which may be your ultimate problem that you have.
Is there anybody that would be pushing something like that? I mean, we have beautiful weather here, and a tent's not a bad way to go. You know, fresh air.
Well, I've been known to be in a tent here in Montana once or twice, so you know, I've survived. But, you know, look, a lot, as I say, a lot of that is up to the judges, both the local judges and the state Supreme Court. Unfortunately, the state Supreme Court, you know, I think you know where they're coming down on a lot of these things, and they're going to be much more restrictive than you might want them to be.
Well, thank you very much. Sure. I really appreciate your time, and have a great one, and be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Before you take the next call, I want to say one thing. It's kind of ironic. John Tester won't talk to you, but he has ads on your radio station.
Yes.
So...
I've noticed that, and Nick and I just shrug our shoulders and say we need to go forward here. So
right, no, it'd be nice if once he would actually talk to you on the airwaves. But go ahead.
Let's put it this way: he has a very open and cordial standing invitation to come into our studio. We'll clear the decks. If he wants to be on for 2 hours, we'll put him on for 2 hours because our listeners want to talk to him.
Right.
So anyway.
Okay, well, the irony there.
So if you run into him in Washington.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's going to take my calls.
All right, let's get Nancy on the line. Nancy, good morning. You are on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you. Yes, Mexico is a failed state, and of course we all know that the Mexican cartel has become the government.
Right.
And they're not going to allow anybody else to own guns. But what I want to say is that I believe it's the cartel that's increased the crime rate here in our state of Montana. They have brought in illegal guns into our state. They are bringing illegal drugs into our state. We've got sex and human trafficking going on in our cities as well as on the reservations. And it is absolutely tragic and just absolutely sickening. And I think maybe some of the solutions could be this. I've talked to the Attorney General, Austin Knutson. We could sue the country of Mexico for reimbursement for what these people are costing us, and also to start, I know that the people on the reservations, anyone else who's lost lives due to the Mexican cartel's presence, money cannot bring back their loved ones, but they could use the money for other ways in their lives. And, but we were, you know, it's just, I know that in the cities of Bozeman and Helena, they're allowing illegal aliens to drive that can't read or write English. And that, to me, is a death trap for all Americans here and elsewhere in the country. I mean, I think it was about a year and a half ago, there was a young mother who had a year-old son in her car seat, and she was pregnant, and she was going on the expressway, and an illegal alien was coming at her on the wrong direction on the expressway, and it was a head-on collision that killed her and her unborn child. So there's an example right there. So I think It's time to really get after the country of Mexico and just hit them everywhere we can due to the crime that they're letting allow into our state. And thank you.
Thanks for the call, Nancy. John.
Well, thanks. I'm not sure how much of a question there was there, but the look, I mean, if Austin thinks that he has a legal case, he's a pretty bright guy legally, and, you know, good luck with it. But, you know, my guess is you probably have a little bit of a hard time winning those types of cases.
Now, in between calls, I know you. There are some things you wanted to address as far as the things that you've been working on.
Yeah, well, so I'm an economist. I'll just mention one thing. At the beginning, we started talking about how a lot of the news reports on crime are kind of, you know, arguing crime's down and people don't understand that. And how I was saying that the media is the one that actually doesn't understand the crime numbers very well, to put it in the most charitable way. But you see something similar with regard to the economic coverage. You know, people, you look at surveys, people feel pretty bad about the economy. And the media is out there saying, look, this is a really great economy. I'll just give you a couple of examples. One is, you know, while wages are up, it's true, but inflation's gone up significantly more than wages. People's real purchasing power, they see whether how far their checks go, their salary goes each month, and they see it doesn't go as far as it did a couple years ago. But one of the things that the administration and the media keeps pushing all the time is how great the job numbers are. So in March, there were 303,000 new people being employed, and they were saying what a great number that is. The problem is the media doesn't do a very good job of explaining how you break down those numbers. So, for example, essentially all those and more were part-time jobs. In March, we had 697,000 new part-time jobs. Most of those were people getting a second or a third part-time job. There were 303,000 or so for their first part-time job. And the number of full-time jobs in the United States actually fell for the seventh month in a row. Okay? So, and the other thing there is who's getting the jobs. If you look over the last year, native-born Americans' employment has actually fallen by 700,000 jobs. What's increased has been you've had about a 1.6 million increase in the number of jobs for non-native-born Americans. So what you've had happen is that the jobs are part-time jobs for people who weren't born in the United States. Now, one thing that the Biden administration will not produce the numbers for is how many work permits that they're giving out for illegal aliens. And you'd like to know, of that 1.6 million, how many of those were illegals that were given work permits versus legal immigrants in there. But they should have those numbers, but the Biden administration won't provide them. My guess is the fact that they're unwilling to provide that probably shows some notion that most of those people probably aren't legally here.
Okay, we're going to come right back. 721-1290 is the number. We have an app question waiting for you, Dr. Lott. And the phone lines, by the way, are clear. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center, of course, headquartered right here in Missoula, the website is crimeresearch.org. You have a question? Phone lines are open at 721-1290. He's here until 10 o'clock, so we'll be right back.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Can you explain something to me?
We are back on Talkback 721. What can we explain to you, John?
Oh, I don't know. I hear all these suicide ads about guns. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've heard these ads about, you know, somebody who's been in the military. Does somebody really think if a military person locks up his own gun that will stop him from being able to get it if he wants to go and commit suicide? Is that relevant there? I don't understand the logic behind these ads. anyway, it just, and besides the fact that, you know, we have lots of data that we've had places that have banned either all guns or all handguns. I want one person to, I want somebody to show me where total suicides fell afterwards. Maybe firearm suicides went down, but people simply used other methods to go and commit suicide that's there. And so all these ads, just they, you know, they want people to lock up their guns. I think they basically, the gun control people, just want to make it difficult and costly for people to be able to use guns defensively rather than actually accomplish anything with suicide.
Okay. Let's, believe we have.
Sorry for.
App question. Go ahead, sir.
Katie had a more specific question about the cartels, John. She asked, do you track the prevalence of cartels from Mexico and elsewhere moving into the U.S. and committing various crimes? Is there an increase over the last few years, and is there much support from the judiciary in prosecuting these cartel members?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think there's been much doubt that there's been a lot more criminals and cartel activity in the United States. There's corruption that's been occurring in some of the border state areas that are there. New Mexico seems to be having a fair amount of problems there. But unfortunately, the government doesn't keep really statistics on how much of the crime is caused. You know, before we were talking about illegals committing the crime, the government also doesn't really keep track on, you know, whether it's cartels or not. You know, I can tell you anecdotally, it seems pretty clear that there's been an increase. But, you know, you need a new administration in there that will actually try to keep track of those types of numbers.
All right. We do have, I believe, Charlene waiting to visit with us. Charlene, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lobb. What's your question, please?
Okay, thanks for taking my call. My question's about the elections. I know you worked on fraud in the elections earlier. Are you going to do that this year before the election?
Well, I've been trying to work on stuff here in Missoula and what have you. You know, to me, the issue is just for people's confidence. I would like the county here, and I like other places in the state, to keep records of who actually voted. Because it seems like you should be able to, I mean, it seems like it's in their interest just to try to stop conspiracy stories from occurring, to say, can you link up the number of people who are listed as voting with the number of ballots cast? You know, if somebody goes and argues that maybe they fed the ballots through more than once, and you have more ballots counted than people listed as voting, or if ballots are destroyed, then you're going to have more people listed as voting than ballots cast. That seems like the most basic thing. I talked to state legislators and whatever, and people just assumed that you could go and know who actually voted in Missoula County. But you can't, because they don't keep the records for those things. One of the most bizarre things, I assume here at the radio station, you guys have some backup on your computers,
yes,
right? Missoula County doesn't have backups on the data for who voted. So, like, I have an Apple computer, and I, you know, I have Time Machine there. I can go and look to see what files I actually had on my computer 3 weeks ago at 11 p.m., okay? It backs it up every hour. But in Missoula County, they can't, you know, if they just backed up their voter files that they have there. I've offered to pay $100, and they can buy, you know, a 4 gigabyte or 4 terabyte hard drive, link it in there, and just back it up there, you know, after the election occurs there. But they won't spend the $100, and they won't even take my $100 to go and do that. It seems like a very simple thing to go and do. So I haven't given up on that yet, but we'll see what happens. All the right. Media here is unbelievable in terms of how it's been reporting on the issue.
Well, I have a problem here. We had a granddaughter that lived with us. When she moved to Washington, she got ballots in both places. Then our daughter moved to Washington State, and now she has tried to get off of the poll, the ballot in whatever, the voter rolls in Montana or Missoula, and she can't. She still got a ballot for the school election.
Right.
So, you know, there's
that's the problem with the mail-in ballots.
That I know about.
I mean, that's, look, One of the things I would get rid of if I was a state legislator is I'd pass a rule that banned people being able to have simply mail-in ballots, where all the ballots get mailed out. I lived in Las Vegas for one period of time, and they had mail-in ballots, and you go into the mail room for the apartment building, and there were mail-in ballots all over the floor. And I got like mail-in ballots for three people that had lived in the apartment before me. I could have filled them out, sent them in, and who would have caught me?
Sure. Charlene, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have another app question standing by, and we have Dave also waiting to visit with us. Our guest here in the studio is Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center and crimeresearch.org. Back after this.
Town Square Media and...
We are back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. Now, Nick, we've got some app questions for Dr. Lott.
Yeah, first one from Liz. She wanted to know, does Dr. Lott have any update on his visit to Ecuador?
Well, I was in Ecuador a couple months ago. It's the second time I've been there since last fall. And all I can say is Ecuador is in a bit of a mess. They've had huge drug gang violence that's been occurring there. I don't know. They're talking about trying to move in a similar direction to El Salvador. But one of the saying – there are two sayings that I must have heard 100 times when I was down there. One was either you take the silver or you take a bullet, basically saying you either take the bribes or you get killed. And the second one is there's a long distance between a good idea and actually implementing it. They have a more colorful way of saying
okay.
But the problem is, you know, you go and talk to people and you give them an idea on how to solve one of their problems, and they say, oh, that's a good idea. We hadn't thought about that. But basically then they tell you that there's so many bribes that occur to so many people that even if they want to do something, somebody will get bribed kind of along the way there and prevent them from instituting any real changes. And so I don't know. One of the things with a country like Ecuador, it's kind of the joke about outrunning the bear. You don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to be faster than everybody else that you're with. And and the thing is, you know, they don't need to be perfect. They just have to make their country less hospitable for drug cartels than other countries, and then the drug cartels will move there. The problem is once they kind of get in there, it's very hard to get them out. And so I'm understanding I'll probably be going back to Ecuador again. But this last time I was there, I met with the secretary for the Ministry of Government. I met with the head of the National Election Commission. I gave a talk to the new university that they have for police officers there in the country. I testified before the Congress on some laws that they're talking about passing, and then I had dinner with the Chief Justice for the country's Supreme Court. So it was kind of a whirlwind. I don't know how many radio interviews I did, but it's just all I can say is it's good to have a good translator when you're there. I have to say that the quality of translators just blows my mind. If I had somebody speaking to me in English and I was to say in English, I'd have to have tell them pause while I go and tell. These translators speak at the exact same time that you speak. I don't even know how their mind works on this, but they apparently do a pretty good job of it. So. Okay. Anyway,
we have another one. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, TJ wanted to know, do you have a think tank that locals can meet and exchange ideas for change?
Well, I have a think tank, but it's not like we have annual or weekly meetings or anything. People can email me and go to our website at crimeresearch.org, and they can email either myself or our executive director, Laura Daniel. And, we're happy to hear ideas and see what we can do about them.
All right. So we have another caller.
We have one more app question.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah,
just a quick one. Jeff wanted to know, does John have any info on Antifa, how it came about and how it operates?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of detailed information on that, but obviously it's very organized, and my own guess is they're probably getting some money from George Soros, but beyond that, I can't tell you too much.
Gotcha. All right, Dave, we have about 2.5 minutes. Dave, what's your question? Quickly, please.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I know of an individual who stole a mail-in ballot, sent it in, and got caught, and now I assume he's in jail. So I wouldn't advise doing that.
Well, no, but let me ask you a question. So sure. I'm in an apartment building. I see mail-in ballots on the floor. I pick them up, and I fill it out, and I put them in. How are you going to catch the person?
When the individual shows up, didn't get his mail-in ballot because he thought the mail was wrong, went into this individual went in, and the woman went in to vote, and there it was, already recorded that she had already voted.
Right, but how do you catch the person who sent it in? You said you caught the person who sent it in. How do you do that?
They took DNA off the letter.
No way. I've never heard of that happening one time. If you can find a news article where they say they took DNA off a mail-in ballot, I'll give you $50. That's just crazy.
Sir, for a year, I served on grand jury duty in Missoula, and that was their case presented to the grand jury.
Okay, and then there's going to be a news article someplace. If you can find me a news article, email me, I'll give you $50.
Well, it's there. It's history. I'll tell you right now, he got caught and is sitting in jail, most likely. I'm not sure.
What do you mean, most likely now? What does most likely mean?
Yeah, well, because I, as a grand juror, we sent him on to do it to a regular trial. So there was a regular trial, and the evidence would be presented, and I don't know what the ultimate outcome of that trial was.
Okay, we are out of time, but thank you for... Okay, real quick, I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up, sir. Go ahead, please.
Well, I don't really have much to add, but, you know, I appreciate you having me here, and people, you know, feel free to reach out and contact me. They go to our website at crimeresearch.org, and there's the contact information there, and always happy to answer people's questions.
And you go to crimeresearch.org, you'll also find all the wealth of books that you've written as well.
Books and all the things that we've talked about pretty much today, except for the economic stuff, is on the website there.
You got it. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Nick, what's coming up on tomorrow's fabulous program, sir?
Our friend and resident CPA, Walt Caro, he'll be on the full 2 hours.
All right, good deal. So we always look forward to Walt being with us. And again, thank you for all your phone calls and some great app questions as well. We appreciate that. You can use the app if you can't get to the phone, just download it and use the Message Us button. So on behalf of Nick and Dr. Lopp and of course, gubernatorial candidate we had on, Mr. Smith, earlier this morning, have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 6 with Ace on Montana Morning.